We're talking with Dr. William Murphy. He is an associate professor of social science at the New England Institute of Technology. And it is in New England, and it's cold there as well. We're just not used to this, Bill. We're just not.
Yeah. Well, you've got my sympathy. You better believe it, Fred.
It is. Wow. Anyway, I enjoyed watching the Rose Bowl just for that. It seemed to be nice over there.
I was saying the same thing yesterday.
I want to get back to this. All right, so we have a 1920 law that we passed after World War I. It's called the Jones Act, which basically says merchant vessels traveling between U.S. ports. This has nothing to do with international commerce, but if you're going from, say, Savannah to Wilmington, it has to be a U.S.-flagged ship, and it's got to follow all the laws, right?
Yes, sir.
Now, my sister, I bring Savannah up because she works at the port there. I was amazed at the container. You see them on trains, you see them on ships from time to time. I was amazed at the sheer volume there. And then you multiply all the other ports around the country, all the way around Florida and the Gulf Coast and the West Coast and the Northeast and even the Great Lakes. We're moving a lot of stuff, right?
Oh, absolutely, Fred. The volume is tremendous. And also, when you look at this, the vastness of the distances and the spaces that are covered, you know, you've got like 95,000 miles of what's classified as shoreline, 25,000 miles of coasts. And then, I mean, even a port the size of Savannah, they're hugely complicated operations just with massive volumes that are extraordinarily difficult to track. And as we were talking about earlier, the processes of the security regimen is extraordinarily complicated too, involving a lot of sensors, inspections, trying to make sure that what's coming in and out is safe from these ports. And that challenge would be complicated immensely if foreign vessels were able to operate in American waterways.
So, and then, of course, you have the safety requirements and the fact that the crew members may not be. I mean, there are just so many things that you look at here that we implement. And some people say they're burdensome. Sometimes they are. Sometimes they're not. But, I mean, you're out there in the middle of the ocean, or if nothing else, you're off the coast going between U.S. ports. A lot of things can go wrong.
Absolutely. I mean, look, a reasonable amount of regulation is absolutely necessary here. One of the first differentiators is simply the background checking and the licensing of the crew members. You know, when you're dealing with these American vessels, that they have been checked out by the Coast Guard and the Department of Homeland Security. You know that the investigations that have been done on their backgrounds involve real documents that are reliable. You don't have any of these assurances with foreign crews. It's just impossible to achieve it. So right there, you have no way that is reliable of ensuring that you're excluding individuals who are terrorist threats or who are threats of involvement in other types of criminal activities that would be dangerous to the United States. So that's huge. And then second, also, as you said, the American vessels comply with safety requirements for the workers, for the public, for the environment. Foreign vessels don't have those same operating requirements. This is what frequently makes them cheaper. And then also the same thing is true in the manufacturing. And on top of not having the same manufacturing and worker safety standards, you then have these illegitimate, unfair trade practices and government manipulation, like currency manipulation, government subsidies to the foreign shipbuilders. All of the large Asian shipbuilding companies, you know, the Chinese, Korea, Japan, these practices are happening. They're hostile and threatening to American industry. And in my opinion, the United States, our international trade policy in other areas, not just shipbuilding, should be counteracting these illegitimate practices, which hurt American workers, hurt our economy, and in this case are extremely threatening to our security.
Well, we almost lost control of our steel, so I guess it's something very similar. Well, what are so this move is afoot. Who's behind it, and what are they trying to do?
Sure. The immediate crew will be, say, or impetus of the current discussion are people who are dissatisfied with relief efforts to Puerto Rico, saying that either they're not proceeding fast enough, reliably enough, or they're expensive. So, and a lot of this is really politically opportunistic. It's politicians covering themselves to avoid responsibility for actually what in many cases are more their own failure to plan, I would say, on the island, number one. And then number two, you're going to always have commercial interests who want to try to exploit this, and primarily these will just be special interest lobbies, trade associations, who want access to cheaper shipping. And the answer always for them comes down to lower costs. So those are the two major constituencies. Of course, they find one another and work together, who are saying we need to repeal the Jones Act. In my opinion, their arguments are unsupportable. They're driven by these sort of superficial special interests, but their claims about the unreliability of U.S. shipping performance to Puerto Rico and also the cost structure, in my opinion, are they're not supportable on the merits, number one, and number two, they neglect vast considerations, particularly in the national security area, that that you just have to look at. You have to make a very solid, comprehensive decision that looks at all the aspect of the impact on all aspects of national interest.
Well, and Puerto Rico's problems are far more than the Jones Act. I mean, they've been living with corruption, and we're you know, facing filing for bankruptcy, and then they get this hurricane, and they can't handle it because they don't have an infrastructure. But this idea, yeah, I mean, that's the other part of this, that, and this is what politicians do, right? But this doesn't keep any foreign ships from coming into Puerto Rico. That's not the issue. It's supplies going from, because Puerto Rico is a U.S. territory, that's where the Jones Act kicks in, right? If it's going from Miami to San Juan, that has to be an American carrier, right?
Yes, you're absolutely right. So number one, the argument is exaggerated in the first place because Puerto Rico can receive foreign vessels, and it does, number one. But let's just go to the first point. The biggest problem with these arguments, Fred, is they take for granted the volume and reliability of American shipping service to Puerto Rico, and you can't do that. Puerto Rico would not enjoy that benefit if it were not for the Jones Act. And granted, I'm not denying that the service is somewhat more expensive, but the price differentials are not exorbitant. They have been exaggerated. And when you take into account the noncompliance with regulations and unfair trade practices that the foreign operators are using, it really is not that significant. So what would the risk if we did not have the Jones Act is if foreign countries, if we became dependent on foreign vessels to support, say, to relieve Puerto Rico or anywhere else, if there's a natural disaster like the tsunamis or all of the ones you've heard about in those countries would pull those vessels into their own national service, or if they're involved in military conflicts, that would leave Puerto Rico and the rest of the United States high and dry, so to speak, without adequate shipping capacity to deal with our needs. And we can't let that happen.
All right. Dr. Bill Murphy is, by the way, in addition to being a social science professor at the New England Institute of Technology, also president of Good Government Now, which is an advocacy group. Tell folks how to get more information on this if they want to read about it.
Sure, Fred. You can go to straighttalkusa.org.